You ready to do a data centric podcast where we talk about where we talk about all things data center?
Let's do it.
Have you been any virtual conferences, Matt?
Yeah, but before I go there, for our next podcast, I want to spend about 10 minutes on 70s one-hit wonders.
Like Afternoon Delight?
Afternoon Delight, Leif Garrett, Sean Cassidy.
Oh, yeah. Sean Cassidy, a doo-wah ditty? No, what was it? A doo-wah something?
Doo-wah day or, yeah. You got it, yeah.
It was something like that.
Yep.
And John Travolta had an album?
Yep.
Yeah.
Henry Winkler never put one out. He was the Fonzie.
No, man, there was a lot of soft rock love songs that were kind of one hit.
I know. This is Peaches and Herb.
Reunite it because it feels so good.
Yep. And that's us on the Data Centric Podcast.
Reunite it, Matt and Steve together again, but virtual.
Let's do this, baby.
Have you been to virtual conferences? What do you think? Do you miss the coffee?
I missed the coffee.
I've been trying to get my housemates here to make me omelets, like an omelet station before.
Caitlin's having none of it.
Nothing. Nada.
I like your, that's a neat approach though. I'm not going to call out any companies individually because, but I've seen varying degrees of good. It's clear every company is trying to make the most of it. Mm-hmm. And every company seems to have their different spin on what they think is going to make it good and bad. I'm probably going to be the contrarian here. I actually think if you gave this a couple of conference cycles, that you could have very good virtual conferences. But it takes, there's a learning process that they have to go through.
Yeah, there is. And so I miss the in-person. I do, and not just because it gets me out of the house, but you're right. I think there's been varying degrees of success. I'll call out somebody. I think Red Hat did a fantastic job. Analysts typically get one-on-one breakouts, and they did Zoom calls with the execs that we wanted to talk to, and it was really nice. NVIDIA has taken an interesting tack. They're now 2 months into their virtual conference, and they continue to add content. This week they did some HPC product stuff or deep learning product stuff we'll talk about, but I get an email every couple days saying there's some new content available. But I'll tell you what has been good, because there are conferences like Microsoft Build, which is going on or just ended, I guess, as we record this, which I would never attend. And the virtual conferences, I guess, because of the lowered expense or whatever, putting these shows on, they're giving these things away for free to attendees. I mean, not the kind of sessions you and I always go to, but if you want to go deep on something, it's there. And I think that increased access is fantastic.
To some degree, though, those were always available on demand after the fact, right? I mean, a lot of these sessions you could go. But to what you're saying, if you want to kind of get it fresh and kind of better feel than that. But one of the things I'll be curious to watch is, like Dell pushed their conference back to October, I think. And, mm-hmm. As the season progresses and, Nutanix, HPE start to do theirs, I'll be curious to see if they watched a Think or watched a Red Hat Summit, kind of took some lessons learned and kind of applied it to what they're doing. And again, those guys were on the very front end and they did some good stuff. But
So I've had some conversations with the AR people at some of those companies. I won't call it anybody specific, but they're being very inquisitive about what's working and what's not working as these other companies are doing it. Yeah. And there's a couple of things, right? I mean, when you think about, I'm not going to complain about anything that's happened at the conference level the first half of this year, and I'll tell you why. These guys had geared up for a conference, which you and I know takes, sometimes a year to plan.
Yep.
And they've had to tear down their existing stuff, right, get out of whatever contracts, et cetera, and spin up this whole digital infrastructure to deliver these things. In NVIDIA's case, in Microsoft's case, they went off and record it, and these aren't live in real time. Now they have to go pre-record.
Yeah.
Right. All of these sessions.
So
just the amount of logistical effort involved in pulling this together, and what in a lot of cases is 12 weeks or less, you know, which is, you know, likely why Dell moved theirs to the fall to give their teams time.
It's a lot of sleepless nights for those event planners.
Yeah. So, you know, they're focused more on getting content out in front of eyeballs right now than they are making it efficient, right? And I think that's going to come. And I think we're already seeing it. I think every one that I've experienced has gotten a little bit better. And some of the tools suck, right? And some of the tools are really good. And you can't blame the companies for that, because until you use them, you don't know. So that's all I have to say.
All right.
Well, I don't miss flying on airplanes, but I'll tell you what, man, I miss being somewhere else sometimes.
Oh, I miss it often. Yes, I miss it often. Speaking of somewhere else,
hey, let's talk a little bit about, because I have a question for you. I did some press earlier this week on Pivot 3. I don't remember if we've talked about them on this podcast or not, but they're an HCI player. They focus on edge HCI. They're a partner of Lenovo. They're kind of vertical, if you will. They focus a lot on video processing, security, things like that, which is a huge market. If you ever step back and take a look at, you know, every camera is now digital, and that data is going somewhere. And count the number of cameras you see next time you walk through the mall, right? Those are all being fed to a Pivot 3 somewhere. But they stepped up with Lenovo and announced a new Pivot 3 offering based on a Lenovo Epic server. The week before, HPE updated their entry-level Simplivity with an Epic chip. And they both touted as part of the launch kind of better economics, single socket licensing with increased core count. Is that significant?
Oh, it sure is. Yeah. I mean, well, so some of it, yes.
And does AMD have an edge on Intel in kind of the single socket space for, you know?
Yeah. So it's, when you talk single socket, it's interesting because when traditionally, and there are always exceptions, but traditionally when Intel supports the single socket platforms, they do two things. One, they tend to defeature the proc. So maybe they'll cut out a memory channel or two. Maybe they'll lower the, and that has an impact on memory capacity. Maybe they'll artificially slow down the clock speed, or there are things they do, and they limit, not only that, they truly limit the number of SKUs that they'll allow to go out into a single socket. And if you look at what HPE, Dell, Lenovo, Cisco, well, not really Cisco in this case, but in some of the other smaller players in the single socket space, they tend to go with very low-end Xeon parts to go into those. So you don't get the processing power,
right.
You don't get the high core counts, memory capacity, cache, and all of the rich features in PCI that make it kind of fly better, right? So that's one thing. The other thing is, AMD is, they ship in PCIe 4 on their parts, and I mean, you're talking double the bandwidth, right? So when you get into local processing, you know, from storage to compute, or from accelerator to compute, that double the bandwidth is a big deal. So there are a couple of reasons why I think they're looking at AMD in that single socket space.
It's interesting. You mentioned a couple things, and I'm gonna jump away from HCI for a second. NVIDIA, as part of their continuing GTC conference, unveiled some new AI architectures, right? And one of these is the A100. And they coupled the A100 into their DGX kind of machine learning supercomputer. And as they unveiled this, they revealed it's powered by AMD EPYC. And they were asked specifically at the end of the rollout a couple of days ago, why did you choose AMD? And their VP of engineering, I forget his name, he said, the only thing we care about in terms of a CPU is being able to serve the needs of the GPU, whether that's Intel or AMD. And I love the way he put this. He said, and I don't know the exact quote, I tried to get it before the call, but he essentially said that they chose a CPU that wouldn't slow down the GPUs. It was a combination of massive core count, the PCI Gen 4, and the number of DDR slots. And then he made the comment, he goes, that's AMD, and, you know, eventually Intel will get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some people in the industry maybe underplayed the PCIe 4 support because, you know, you don't see the broad adoption of it yet from a peripheral perspective. But, you know, it's always the leading edge apps that are going to take advantage of these advancements, right? And you talk about the A100, that's a perfect example. And it's just a matter of quarters before everything's on PCIe 4. This kind of reminds me of when, you know, AMD was behind the curve on the memory adoption side with DDR3 and no DDR4. Intel went out and hammered them left and right because they didn't have DDR4 support, right? Which, you know, was a memory speed issue and a number of other issues. So, you know, it's a step up for AMD.
Yeah, so Microsoft also at Build this week announced its Azure supercomputer using the, they didn't call out the A100, they confirmed it afterwards. They didn't talk about the CPU, but I think the inclusion of the A100 and NVIDIA's demands in that space, that's likely an epic.
It is. It was later revealed.
They revealed it. I don't know if they revealed it, but it was called out as AMD later on.
Okay. So AMD and NVIDIA together are just dominating not just AI, but the supercomputing space right now.
And it makes sense, right? I mean, because you hit on the things when you think about the characteristics of high-performance computing or supercomputing. Mm-hmm. Right? You need to move memory or stuff or data in and out of memory as fast as possible. You need to pull it, feed the GPU as quickly as possible.
Yes.
Right? You talk about memory bandwidth, memory capacity, and ability to get to the peripheral as quickly as possible. Those are all, he's right, that is what Rome is. Even if you say those cores don't perform as well, mm-hmm. all of those other functions are really what you care about in HPC, right?
Yep.
So it makes sense. I'll be curious, this, not to kind of transition, but this leads into, you know, the announcement Lenovo made with them a couple of weeks ago, you know, filling out their portfolio of AMD products. They did the SR645 and 665, the two socket boxes, 1U and 2U. You know, you look at Lenovo and what they've done in the, you know, in the top 500 supercomputing, it looks like a natural marriage for them to go after more HPC deals. So you've got this killer of a part in EPYC, and then you've got this company that knows how to go win supercomputing deals. It's going to be really fun to watch them over the next few quarters and see how much damage they can do.
They really will. Well, let's
isn't it interesting though that AMD and NVIDIA are playing so well together and going and saving the world together? I mean, it wasn't too long ago that AMD wouldn't support the NVIDIA GPUs because of the, you know, the bitter rivalry.
Right, exactly. Now, you know, I don't expect they're going to buddy up and play well together in the consumer space.
Sure.
This is it's a whole different world between the kind of servers we're talking about and mainstream servers.
Yeah, you're right. Probably not even commercial HPC. They probably won't play so nicely together. Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to switch gears. And you told me before this call, you said, let's not talk about earnings, but I think we should a little bit. Here's what I want to say, though. I'll put the disclaimer up front, right? You and I are not stock analysts. And
nope.
I don't want to talk about numbers, right? And I think, as we record this, we've seen Lenovo and HPE. I don't think we'll have kind of a full understanding of what's happening in the world until we see Dell's numbers next week and some other earnings that are coming out late next week, right? So with all that disclaimer, COVID-19 is killing these guys. Here's what I think we've seen over the first 5 months of 2020, right? We've seen an uptake in mobile sales, which you and I don't pay a lot of attention to, right? But it's clear as we migrate to a remote workforce. We've seen a lot of, at least anecdotally, right? A lot of movement around VDI deployments, which are driving some server sales, right? I think long-term infrastructure projects are probably on hold. But supply chain has been hugely impacted. And, you know, we think about COVID-19 as impacting us starting in March, but it started impacting some of the supply chain heavy areas in China late last year.
Sure,
And HPE's earnings came out. Won't talk about the numbers. Let's just say they were disappointing. But the message from HPE was this was a supply chain issue. And to show you that, you know, we have $1.5 billion of backlog products we could not ship in this quarter because we couldn't get them built.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if that impacts Dell as well.
Well, you know, it's funny because on the HPE side, I'm not a prophet, but I just did a piece on this in Forbes about the impact of supply chain. Mm-hmm. HPE is interesting, though. You know, I think while they were impacted by this supply chain issue, to some degree for this past quarter, they have a very robust approach to supply chain, from kind of a quality of product, security of overall deliverable. And I think we're going to try and get one of those guys on here in the next couple of weeks to kind of talk about, you know, how they're addressing supply chain moving forward. So that should be a fun one.
No, I read your piece, and it's interesting because, this goes off of earnings a little bit, but when you think about cybersecurity, and I think this is what I tweeted out on your piece, you don't often think about what happens to your equipment before it shows up on your dock, right? And that's a huge vulnerability where HPE has been, you know, kind of front and center and taking the lead on how do I secure my supply chain. And this is not a new threat. I remember a decade ago reading stories about, you know, Cisco gear being intercepted in the, you know. But HPE's taken kind of a component up approach to, go ahead.
I will say this. There's so many touch points along the way, right? From component, you know, from capacitors and resistors all the way to the silicon to.
Don't hit the desk when you do that, Matt.
There are all these touch points along the way. You've got to resell it. When you think about kind of drawing out the path to the consumer, from a supplier, it's crazy how complex that is. I mean, it really is in some ways rocket science. That's part one. Part two is I think on the going back to the numbers, I think HPE, I think, is in better shape than the numbers kind of point to. I think they actually have the way they're transitioning their company, to the as a service, kind of and leaning on their professional services more and more.
Yep.
To me, that is where the world is going, and it's going to be a tough transition. It always is to change from what you were to what you want to be. But I think on the other side, there's a really strong company that comes out of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that. I'm looking for the numbers now as we go, but their as a service is GreenLake. And what they said in their earnings call yesterday was, and this is a quote from Neary, we gained traction in HPE GreenLake, continue to see acceleration in this profitable strategic business, seeing larger deals coming in. It says our annualized revenue run rate is up 17% for GreenLake to $520 million. So yes, I think their as a service is a boom. I think everyone's as a service is going to grow first half. This sudden reconfiguration of everyone's data center, I think, is highlighting the need for let's bring on some of this capacity on demand, right?
But there's a challenge in there, right? Because some of this as a service is as a service local to your data center, right? So I think they actually haven't even seen what it can possibly be. Now you think, because you think about that, you take the professional services aspect of that, sending feet out on boots out on the ground to install and configure, all of those projects are held up, right? Because or a piece on kind of lights up data center.
Yeah.
There's a lot, you can't deliver these. You can't put them in to start that kind of meter ticking. So I think it's not even seen its full potential yet.
No, I agree. But I think we are seeing a COVID-driven uptake in these things. You and I, we talked on this podcast, Pure Storage a couple of weeks ago. And, they said we're seeing business increase for VDI deployments. And as a service is attractive because I get kind of the cloud economics without trying to migrate my applications to the cloud. Because you think about, you can't push a button and retool your IT infrastructure to use the cloud, right? So if I suddenly need to support 30,000 VDI for remote workforce, I've got to do that in my existing infrastructure, right? And I don't maybe want to use the capital investment. And I think we're seeing an uptick for all of these guys, and it's certainly demonstrating the power and the flexibility. So I'm still a fan of the as a service.
As opposed to
cloud. Yeah, go ahead.
One last thing, and I know you want to move on because we have a hard stop on this, but you know, one of the things, interesting little bits I saw in the HPE presentation was that their synergy, the composable infrastructure business, was actually up a little bit over the last quarter, which in the face of, you know, kind of other areas being compute being down, storage being down, I thought that was interesting because it speaks to that whole, you know, kind of the cloudy environment that companies are trying to deploy. I wonder, you know, any of this is driven by the awareness that you're not always going to be able to be on site to provision and deploy servers. So interesting.
Yeah, and in the other area of bright news in HPE was Intelligent Edge, which did what? They grew in North America by 12% first quarter. And the networking piece was up 7%. Now, it's hard to contextualize this a little bit because prior to the earnings, I think they did a reorganization. And I'm not clear looking at the slides whether this reflects the new organization or the old one, because Edge now includes, what's their networking business?
All the Aruba stuff.
Yeah. But either way, right? I mean, if you look at Edge as kind of a category, it's good to see growth there. It's good to see growth in the services, and on server and storage. We'll see what shakes out. There was another earnings call.
Name was Lenovo, I believe.
Lenovo, which was not as dire as HPE's, but I'll also say their level of business is not at HPE scale, right? So they're, if you look at proportional impact,
The thing with Lenovo is, I read some articles on them, and I hate reading the press because it's like they don't always take a critical look at what's going on. They just look at the top line numbers or the bottom line numbers and kind of report out on that. And the thing with Lenovo, where they got hit was hyperscale, on the data center side. They've been maybe overly dependent on hyperscale for a long time. As they've been building up that non-hyperscale business, and it shows in this, right? As hyperscale has dipped, if you look, their non-hyperscale business is still growing.
Yeah, they broke out on the chart, and I don't know that I've seen it broken out previously. Maybe they did, and I don't remember it. So they said revenue decline year over year on hyperscale. Hyperscale is actually down close to 9%, but non-hyperscale revenue grew 5.3%, right? Double-digit growth across key segments. It says server is up 14. Server volume is up 14% year over year. China revenue is up 23% year over year. Storage is up 54%. It's a nascent business, and we're talking small numbers. But if you look at where the momentum is, and the fact that we're seeing upward arrows in a quarter that others are suffering in.
I'm looking at their chart. Their volume growth, the server volume growth is 14%. Their revenue is not, I see 3.6 revenue. It doesn't matter, year over year revenue growth at 3.6. Now, 3.6, 5.3, it doesn't matter. What that tells me is that their channel business is doing better and they're not getting the ASPs that, because those are not great ASPs typically on the volume business. But they have, but there is growth, right?
Which is why they're calling out server volume as opposed to server revenue.
That's right,
And they're using revenue everywhere else. And the other thing to keep in mind with Lenovo, because it's not necessarily apples to apples with an HPE, they're heavily China-centric in Asia in their server business. And that's a region that's, bouncing back a little bit from the COVID that we're still experiencing.
But I actually look at their numbers and I go, okay, well, it looks to me like they're on track. They're growing their non-hyperscale business, which is what they've had to do to kind of get a sustainable run rate, quarter over quarter. That's good. You can see that through the volume. they'll fix the volume, or they'll fix the ASP issue. And when you look at some of their strategic initiatives, you know, software-defined services, you know, they have strong growth across those. Sure. You're talking about storage, right? And so to me, you know, if you read the press, you go, man, that doesn't look good. I read it and I go, you know what? I see the green shoots there, and they're green shoots that go in the way that, you know, Kirk is wanting to take the business, right? So, you know, just keep on doing it and don't pay attention to some of these pundits out there.
I think they're right. And I don't think Lenovo does pay a lot of attention to the pundits, honestly, watching them do business. The other note on Lenovo, and I think this is, you know, you and I are both paying a lot more attention to Edge right now. And Lenovo's Edge business, that's a critical area of focus to them. They started a division late last year that's 100% Edge focused. It's starting to pay off. I wish they gave us revenue numbers, right? All we can look at is growth. But it says smart IoT quadrupled. Smart infrastructure, which is Edge, Intelligent Edge, is up 37% year over year.
Yeah.
And software and services is up 43%.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we saw similar numbers in HPE. Services are up across the board.
I look at it, Lenovo on the Edge is kind of how I look at Lenovo in storage, and that those are good numbers. I think they're kind of starting to hit some kind of velocity, but I think they're starting from a smaller starting point than an HPE.
Sure,
business. And I'm not. I only say that because I don't want it to come across that Lenovo is killing it and HPE is not killing it on the Edge side. I think given the market conditions, HPE was pretty darn strong on the Edge side worldwide, not just North America. Anyway, sorry.
No, you're good. They have, this is confusing. I'm looking at their deck, and they have two different growth numbers for non-hyperscale compute. Maybe I'm reading it wrong. One says 3.6%, but if you go up a few slides, or back on your deck, right? On slide 7, it shows 5.3.
Interesting. Yeah, I was reading something else that said they, and I haven't seen this in their slides, but I didn't look at them as deeply as I should have, but you know, they said that their HCI business was not as strong from a revenue perspective as they had hoped it would be. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of curious, as to what that is. You know, what I read speculated that they sold a decent amount early on, but it kind of, things got saturated with COVID and put a big stall in deployments and kind of expansions. But, you know, it's hard to really tell. But, you know, they've got a really interesting, they've got a really interesting HCI approach, right? They partner with everybody, seemingly, which is not a bad, I don't mean that as a negative, but they have a lot of different kind of HCI partners that they go to market with.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, they partner with Pivot, they partner with Scale Compute. They have some Nutanix business on the enterprise side.
Yeah.
Well, what I'd like to see is more color on what they're doing with storage, because it's an area of focus for me. They grew 54%, it said. They have the JV with NetApp, which should start bearing fruit, right, first half of this year. NetApp's earnings are on the 27th, I think. So, you know, we'll see what they say about that business.
See what NetApp's China number looks like.
NetApp, yeah. We'll talk about NetApp next, maybe not next one, in one of the upcoming podcasts, the post-earnings. But they just brought on a new president, and their existing president, George Kurian, shifted to CEO. And this is on the heels. So if you look over the past 12 months, I think they replaced most of their senior leadership. So it'll be interesting. What else do you want to talk about, Matt?
I want to talk about a lot of things, but I think you need to go run and take care of some errands or something. So
we're making sourdough, and I don't know if you heard the timer behind me.
Of course you are.
Man, my butt was already big, but my wife is making two pies a week. She's making ice cream. She's got bread and ice cream going right now.
I love that.
It's been nice.
Good for her and good for you, man. I'm going to run. I got to get out and not be so stir crazy.
All right, go run. And I don't know if we have a guest next time, but we have a guest coming up soon.
I think it might be the next time, maybe not the next time, but in the next couple podcasts, as you talk about, we're going to have John Grosso from HPE. He heads up supply chain worldwide and their strategic engineering initiative. So he's going to talk about kind of what we were talking about earlier, all the supply chain craziness going on and how they navigate those crazy waters. So it's going to be fun.
There's going to be a lot of HPE news coming up, I'm predicting. I haven't been briefed, but HPE Discover is still on for late June, which is, you know, only a month away.
Yep.
So I expect them to make announcements across the board. Their storage stuff is getting stale. It's ready for refresh. So I'm expecting some storage stuff for sure. Mm-hmm. It'll be an interesting time. All right, man. So we'll see you
next time. Hey, great chat, man. We'll talk soon.
Yeah.